הרדיו הבינתחומי.
בינתחומי.
106.2 FM.
הרדיו הבינתחומי.
הרדיו החינוכי של המרכז הבינתחומי. לכל ישראל.
Greetings, this is Danny from Cradle of Filth, and you're listening to Metal Metal.
אריסה של זוהמה בישראל. זה קורה בעשירי למרץ.
בעשירי למרץ להקת קריידל אוף פילת' מגיעה לישראל להופיע ברידינג 3, ואנחנו במטל מטל לא רק שעושים לכם תוכנית שכולם קריידל אוף פילת' אלא מדברים עם לא אחר
מאשר דני פילת'
דני זוהמני הצעיר. הוא הולך להתארח פה ולהיות איתנו לאורך כל התוכנית הזאת, לענות על השאלות שלנו, לקבל את ההצקות שלנו.
דני, 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 דני זוהמני. וזה הולך לקרות היום במטל מטל, סולן קרדל אוף פילת' ולא אחר הולך להיות כאן. זה מדהים, זה מעולה. אנחנו ממש מתרגשים, גם ההופעה, גם הרעיון הזה. קרדל אוף פילת' בישראל, 10 למרץ 2018.
ואנחנו מתחילים את התוכנית הזאת.
בלגן, עם הר גוסט, אין דה פוק.
Queen of snow, far beyond compare, lips and true dissymmetries are everywhere.
Dark liquid eyes and a radiant nightmare.
You should have wanted to come and throw my brother's fast bow. I do know that good the devil gets to feel this blue. That's fate for me.
קרדל אוף פילת' באים לישראל, מטל מטל, במשדר שכולו אריסה שזוהמה. כן.
דמיין דבר כזה, מעבר לזה שקרדל אוף פילת' באים, זה דבר שאם היו מספרים לי את זה כאילו לפני שנה, לפני שנתיים, לפני חמש שנים, לא הייתי מאמין שזה באמת הולך לקרות, כי קרדל אוף פילת' והם לא באו עד היום, אז למה שהם יבואו עכשיו? הדבר היחידי שגורם לזה להיות עוד יותר לא אמין, זה כאילו שאם אנחנו נעשה חבר רעיון עם דני פילת'.
דני זוהמני.
כאילו יגידו לי, עכשיו אתה הולך לראיין את דני פילת'.
זה מטורף, זה מטורף.
עכשיו לקרות.
כשהיינו בני טיפש עשרה, אז פשוט ממש כאילו גדלנו על דני פילת' ועל קרדל אוף פילת', וזה ממש סגירת מעגל מטורפת לבוא היום עם אלבום חדש ומעולה שהם הוציאו ב-2017, קריפטוריאנה, The Seductiveness of Decay, ובטור שלו הם מגיעים לארץ, ועכשיו אנחנו הולכים לעבור לאנגלית, כי דני פילת' is going to be now in metal metal, great, fucking, awesome, yes, דני פילת'. Okay, so Metal Metal, now we have with us a very special guest, Danny Filth, lead singer of a Cradle of Filth band that we have played in this show numerous times. Very excited to have you here, Danny. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. It's early in the morning for me.
In fact, I didn't even know this hour existed.
What time is it there?
It's 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock. Okay. So
in the
in the early morning. We're very excited of you coming here for the first time. So our first question would be, how come this happens only now? We've been waiting for, like, since the dawn of Cradle of Filth.
I have absolutely no idea. Generally, tours are booked and gigs are booked by promoters, and it all follows a certain hierarchy. And Israel has definitely been on our bucket list, as have many other countries, for quite some time. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've been wanting to go to Turkey for a long time. So in fact, we've been offered 3 shows there, and each time that we're about to play one of them, there's been some kind of public disturbance there, and the government shut the shows down. But yeah, I mean, it's just good that the date has actually arrived and that we are going to play Israel. But it's not for lack of trying. Hopefully the show will be successful and we'll have the opportunity to regularly visit Israel.
Talking about your latest effort, The Seductiveness of Decay, which we think is one of your best works ever. We love this album. We think it's
amazing.
Just amazing. Mm-hmm. We wanted to know, first of all, would you consider that yourself, that this is one of Cradle of Filth's best works? And also, how did you feel when you released it as before people heard it?
Well, obviously, every time we leave the studio, we have to be 100% happy with what we've created. There's never been a time where we haven't left the studio and gone, oh, you know what, it wasn't very good, was it? You know, but hey, never mind. And obviously, when we left the studio, we're very proud of what we've achieved. We worked very hard on this record. It was a culmination of a year's intense writing and production. Obviously, when you leave the studio, you can't decipher people's intentions towards the albums or how you think they're going to react to it. But as long as you're happy with it, then I think that's all that matters. And yeah, we're particularly proud of the record. A new incarnation of the band, which has been in effect for about 5 years now, 5-6 years, which started with Hammer of the Witches, is now moving forward. We're obviously about to embark on a world tour. Well, we've already started putting out actual ideas for the next record, you know, just little seeds of germination. We're all getting along famously, so I can't see how this wouldn't, you know, extend into a third album of this particular epoch of Cradle of Filth's history.
Did you record anything or have anything for the next record already, or just ideas?
We have some stuff that's work in progress. For example, on this record, the title track and Achingly Beautiful were both work in progresses from the last record. Mm-hmm. But they just weren't developed enough and they didn't sit properly, and we didn't want to over-furnish the last record. You know, you can only... It's okay, people saying, yeah, we want as much stuff on an album as possible. But, you know, it's about quality and not quantity. You could keep writing and writing, but if you look back at some of the best albums ever been written are short and concise and to the point and don't over-labor their presence.
So you're saying that The Seductiveness of Decay was supposed to be a song in the...
Well, it wasn't supposed to be. It was just the formative stages of that song in particular happened during the sessions for Hammer of the Witches. But it just didn't sit right, and we had a lot of material. We've got some stuff that we've written that didn't actually find its way onto The Seductiveness of Decay as well. Mm-hmm. Whether we'll use it on the next record, I don't know. The next record might veer off and do a different tangent altogether. We'll start nibbling away at ideas, I guess. Not purposefully, but whilst we're on the road and we get a little bit bored, or someone's got a guitar, or, you know, somebody goes, oh, you know, I've got some ideas I want to play people. And that's really how an album starts, you know. You kind of sow the seed.
Okay, so and that's a great time to listen to, well, for me, it's my favorite song of the record. The single that came out as a video, Heartbreak in Sians, from this album, Cryptoriana, The Seductiveness of Decay. Anything you can tell us about this song or its lyrics?
Well, obviously, like you mentioned, it was a video track. It's the first single, and it's the tragic story of two lovers who've been separated by a great war. Which, bearing in mind that the album is based about the Victorian era, one would assume it was something to do with maybe Crimean War, something like that. One of the characters watches his wife from beyond the pale, beyond death. He yearns to return to her while she attempts to contact him through the act of spiritualism and planchette and Ouija board and table turning. She's basically trying to contact him, the dead. But Graham Nivolonia can only watch her sort of falter from afar as she spirals towards eventual suicide. So it's a little, like a, I guess, a kind of Victorian Gothic horror Romeo and Juliet.
Let's give it a try. Heartbreaking Science, Cradle of Filth. Here we go. Science, we're back, metal, we're with Danny Filth, lead singer of Cradle of Filth. I'll just go back to the beginning and ask a question that probably you've been asked a million times, but we haven't saw it anywhere. So where did you come up with this name for the band, Cradle of Filth, and also what came first, Danny Filth or the Cradle of Filth?
The egg,
yeah,
not the chicken.
Yeah. Basically.
Well, you know what, it's so far back into the, you know, the mists of time that I can't actually remember the actual reasoning behind the name. I think it was a concoction of several things. I think it was something that was spied on the back of a jacket at a concert. And I think it came from something like Cradle of Fire or something like that, something that was red, and then it just seemed more apt to kind of dirty it up. And the name, I think, came from also the ideology that the world's slightly corrupted, a little bit like the origins of Adam and Eve and Lilith being the first kind of trespasser, that she was born from filth, which is also something that's plagued, I guess, the Cradle of Filth discography and artwork and imagery since we began, was the idea of this sort of corrupted goddess figure.
So in a way, you came back to that concept
egg.
Of in Lilith, Immaculate.
Yeah, I think it's something that we often revisit. Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. And Lilith herself is a very strong character with origins in Jewish mythology, as you obviously know. Mm-hmm. But I can't remember who actually came up with the name. Obviously, when you start a band, and I know this because obviously I've had a couple of other bands, Temple of the Black Moon, and my current band, other band, Devilment. And when you come to sit down and actually think of a name, there's so many that have been taken and so many that are ridiculous. I mean, nowadays, people just seem to be putting three words together, like dentist on Friday, or opportunity in Chicago, just, you know, random, the pigeon detectives. People are just running out of things to
Yeah, today there's like really good sites that actually generate metal band names.
I think the Pigeon Detectives is great, first of all. And
it's a real band. It's a real band. And the band hate the name. They really hate it. I don't know why they came up with it. I was told. Like an indie band. My friend actually is a merch guy for them. But
awesome.
Yeah, I think it's really, really difficult. And I think even back then, which would have been, 1891, not 1891. I think even back then it was a bit difficult to come up with something. I think, you know, if you've seen the list of bad names, you've probably gone, oh my God, just give up now.
And you have a very extreme visual and lyrical content on your works. And did you ever get in trouble for it in a way, having naked women in bathtubs full of blood and t-shirts that are saying Jesus is a cunt and stuff
Satanic
like that?
Satanic references.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we have in the past. But ironically, when we go to the States, you'd imagine lots of people rocking up with, you know, signs and being riots and things like that. But none of that's really ever occurred with us. We had a little bit of trouble in Russia. We were on tour at the same time as Cannibal mm-hmm. Corpse mm-hmm. in Russia, and they had all the trouble. And we just had, like, one show cancelled. And obviously, yeah, in the past, you know, we've been arrested at the Vatican. We've had a lot of trouble with various designs. But ironically, covers have been banned for the most stupid reasons. I think pornography. We had to replace the cover because the original length of the hem of the dress that the girl was wearing was a little bit short. It showed her knee.
Really? In which country?
No, that's woo.
In what?
America.
In America. But you had before that from the Cradle to Enslave EP, like, I don't know, a woman that is being butchered inside a bathtub with, I don't know, like, how did that, that's like less
well,
extreme
I guess,
than...
I guess over the years we've moved from different distributors. If anything goes into Walmart, you know, just forget about it. You really, you know, you might as well just have a massive sticker that says don't buy it on it.
They used to sell bullets on Walmart.
Oh, they still do. They still do, but that's the ideology of America, isn't it? Someone gets killed in America, massive, you know, someone comes and guns down 62 people, and the first thing everybody does is go out and buy guns.
It's a good idea.
And literally illogical.
Yeah, and put some PMRC stickers on you know, on albums, on metal albums.
Maybe it's also because that pornography sounds like pornography.
Yeah, maybe.
Talking about pornography, I don't really know what happened around the world, but in Israel, when this album came out, I think that mainly us two were like really big fans of it. But, you know, the black metal scene, they're like True and Kvelt and whatever, trying to be very, oh no, this scene's going towards kind of something more, let's say, mainstream in a way. So this is not black metal. And we really loved this album. We think it's a really great thing. It was different than what you did in the 90s for sure. But very melodic and great album. And how was that perceived in the general world from your experience?
Well, I mean, it sold really well, but I know what you mean. If you look at the back catalogue and canon of the band, there's a lot of people that do look at that and say, you know, that's least favourite record because it does veer towards being a little bit commercial. Mm-hmm. Something I've kind of replicated, I guess, with my other band, Devilman. I see that as an extension of the sound from that record. Ironically, nowadays, a lot of people revisit that album and go, oh yeah, actually, I really like this. Mm-hmm. It's just taken a long time for people to realize that it's a great record. I mean, I really love it as well. I think it's got some brilliant songs on it. And we still play Under Huntress Moon live. Sometimes we play Dirge Inferno. Mm-hmm. I really would love to play I Am the Thorn again.
Oh, that's a really great song. That's a really great song.
Yeah, so I have no problems with the record. I think a lot of people do. It's a kind of guilty pleasure. But it's understandable that it's quite a big jump from something like Cruelty and the Beast. Mm-hmm. And talking about Cruelty and the Beast, I've actually was in the studio this week, and I'll be in the studio again next week, working with the producer, Scott Atkins, who did Cryptoriana, on a remix, a total remix, total revamp of the album Cruelty and the Beast for the 20th anniversary, which happens next year. So,
oh, it's going to be out a 20-year anniversary?
Yeah, that remixed album will see the light of day.
Oh, amazing.
I think April, May next year. We haven't got a definitive date at present, but it's very exciting because obviously it's a great record. Some people say it's our best record, but the production slightly lets it down. So we're doing a total remix, making it sound big and very modern, but without taking away any of the atmosphere. So we're not stripping it back. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not taking keys away or the reverbs or the inherent atmosphere contained on the album. We're just giving it a really good, you know, picking it apart, washing it and putting it back together again.
Okay, so speaking about Cruelty and the Beast, I think it's a great time to listen to Beneath the Howling Stars. Anything to say about that song?
No.
Okay, great. So we'll just listen to it.
That's another film. We're actually playing that. And in fact, I think we'll probably play this track in Israel as well.
Oh, amazing. Great. So Beneath the Howling Stars, one of our favorites of Cradle of Filth, a classic song from 1998.
Yep.
The Cruelty and the Beast. Stars, metal, we're back. Great classic song from Cradle of Filth. We're with the main man, Danny Filth. Very excited to have you on our show. We had a lot of black metal artists and also British artists on our show. But I have to say that for me, being born in the 80s, Cradle of Filth was one of the first extreme bands. I think the first one that I ever heard with a voice that wasn't a clean vocals, which was kind of hard in the beginning, but getting from your voice into all this world of, let's say, kind of more extreme vocalism, I think that opened for me specifically a door to a whole world of bands that I didn't listen to before. So thank you for that.
Your parents must love us.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, for sure. Do you listen to metal these days? Anything new or old?
Yeah, of course I do. I listen to a huge amount. And that's the fortunate thing of being on a big label like Nuclear Blast is that you get tons of free CDs. So I'm basically listening to a lot of Nuclear Blast material. I really like The Last Anthrax. I love The New Destruction.
Thrash Anthems 2, mm-hmm. which is better than Thrash Anthems 1, to be honest, because it sounds like they're not trying to redo the songs, they're just playing them through, and it's very nostalgic. I quite like hardcore as well, so I like the new Blood Clot record, mm-hmm. Propagandhi, The Bronx. I love the new Satyricon album, I've got that pretty much stuck in the car at the moment, mm-hmm. and a bunch of soundtracks as well. Murder on the Orient Express and Exposed, and the last Planet of the Apes album was amazing.
Did you get to see any band that you didn't know that was on tour in a way with you or around your show in a festival or anything like that you thought like this is great?
Well, I saw I played Bloodstock, my band Devilment, mm-hmm. this year, and I got to see I saw Possessed play, which was great, and Ghost, which was awesome as well, real spectacle. But generally, I never really get to see, I didn't go to a huge amount of concerts, mainly because I'm probably away so much that the last thing I want to do when I come home is to go out and see a concert again. And also, I don't live in London. I live in Ipswich, which is out in the countryside. Quite a big town still. And I do go to local gigs, but they're generally bands you would never have heard of. They're sort of underground bands, which is cool. Mm-hmm. It's always the way when we play something like, I don't know, Hellfest, for example. You go there and go, oh, brilliant. You've got the Misfits playing. You've got this guy's playing. You've got Danzig playing there. You've got Satyricon or Immortal. And you make a checklist. Yeah, I'm definitely going to go and watch this. I'm going to go and watch this. Get very excited about it. And 9 times out of 10, probably 10 times out of 10, you're either getting ready for the show or you've got press or you've got something you're doing at exactly the same time as the band you want to see.
Is there an artist in the metal scene that you would like to work with that you haven't had a chance to?
Not necessarily in the metal scene. We've done something with King Diamond. I mean, it was only a jokey kind of song. There was a cover of Cliff Richard's Devil Woman. But to do more stuff with King Diamond would be great because obviously he's got an awesome voice and he's a bit of a hero of mine. Bruce Dickinson would be cool, and or Rob Halford, both of whom I've met, you know, plenty of times. Mm-hmm. Out of the metal scene, I think Dear Amanda Gallas would be great. I know Ross mm-hmm. Christ has worked with her, but it's been something that was on our radar for a long time.
That was an amazing, amazing song they did with her.
Yeah, and I, you know, we've been wanting to work with her since I think I heard the Dracula soundtrack back in, God knows when it was, 92 or something.
Okay, before we're going to listen to a track from Thornography, we talked about it before, but I just wanted to add something more. In your Wikipedia page, it says, the band has broken free from its original niche by courting mainstream publicity. Do you somehow agree with this claim, or are you going to delete your whole Wikipedia page because of it?
With no doubt, somebody wrote that press release from a record company. But yes, I guess we have courted mainstream publicity, mm-hmm. especially here in Britain at some point, which is good, I think. I think it's good. It's, as you mentioned before, about discovering extreme metal through Cradle of Filth. I think it's opened a door of opportunity to a lot of fans. The fact that stuff like Ed Sheeran and all that rubbish is popular is because no one else hears anything other than that. It just dominates the charts. Mm-hmm. And when you hear it day in, day out, you just kids just assume that's what music's about. It's Ed Sheeran or it's, you know, some rubbish like Katy Perry or stuff. They just think that's it. That's where music begins and ends. And it's only if you get into the consciousness of the general populace and they see these things, people get interested and go, oh, you know what, that appeals to me, I'm going to check that out. And then the doors open and they discover, wow, it's not just this band, there's hundreds of bands like that and they've been doing it for 20, 30 years. So yeah, I agree with the statement and I think it's a good thing.
Exactly, I think that people, especially from the black metal, are very afraid to be considered someone that's trying to approach the big crowd because they're supposed to live in a cave.
No,
with
I don't
bats.
Believe that anymore. I know most people from the big bands, you know, and none of them are like that. They'd all caught the same media attention if they could. There's only a handful of bands. It's mainly fans. It's mainly a small percentage of fans that want to keep everything under lock and key and mm-hmm. pure and you know, dark and want to live in a cave and have pointy sticks and look like a badger.
Yeah, I think that that was his initial intention of talking about from the fans' perspective, that there is some kind of a veil around black metal, that it should be something very underground, and if it comes out of the underground, then it's not okay. And I think even if it's bigger than just black metal, because it happened also with, I don't know, like hardcore Metallica fans when they released their first video. So it's always like there's like the hardcore fans that will take it really hard if some band that was only theirs in their ears and their CD at home, and then now everybody loves it, then now they don't like it anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so I think it's a great time to listen to a little bit more mainstream in a way album called Tronography. We spoke about I'm the Thorn, which is one of the more heavier song on these albums and also a great, great song. Let's give it a try. I Am the Thorn. I'm the Thorn, Cradle of Filth. We're talking with Danny Filth, and in a point where the internet was not on it was on its rise, but it was not like today.
But year 2000.
Yeah, something like that. Then we saw this movie called Cradle of Fear, and in the beginning we didn't even know if it's real because we didn't have any idea about Cradle of Filth had a movie. So we watched it, and it was actually a movie that you guys made, and it was. We really like this movie. I think it's like really great old school kind of, I wouldn't say slasher, but in a way, I don't know, a great horror movie.
Well, that was the intention of it. Yeah, it was supposed to be like the stuff that was around at the beginning of the 80s. The stuff that was banned, X-rated films. It was supposed to be something, you know, like the films you used to discover on battered old Betamax copies that they'd sell you under the counter at video stores and that. Stuff like Scanners and Zombie Holocaust and Cannibal Apocalypse, you know, that sort of vibe to it. It wasn't supposed to be Martin Scorsese by any means.
Yeah, for sure.
It was supposed to have that kind of lo-fi quality about it.
But one of the I don't really remember. I think it was like three or four stories that were different in this feature.
Yeah, it was supposed to be like a horror anthology that was popularized sort of the back end of the 70s, like Hammer Horror or Amicus, where it's like a montage of different stories that all come to a conclusion at the end, so they're all linked.
There was one story that had this room of horrors, like a site that you go to, and then people can choose.
Yeah, the secret.
I love this one. What is that original? Like it's your guy's idea of a script? Because that's amazing.
Yeah, and ironically, it was taken. I believe that Eli Roth stole the idea for Hostel, or at least seen it, and then thought, "Wow."
Yeah, but that came years later.
Yeah, exactly. But I think he hinted as much in an interview once that he'd seen that. But yeah, that it was good. It was a great end to the film. There was, I mean, I believe that was the last story. Mm-hmm. But everybody involved in that film were either borrowed from film school, or they were in between jobs. Some of them were working on Saving Private Ryan and the last Hellraiser at the time, and all the models, all the girls, and all the freaky people in it, like the amputees and the dwarves. We knew that most of them had actually been on our video from the Cradle to Enslave. And in fact, it's the same director. And after doing Cradle to Enslave, we thought, you know what, this is great. Wouldn't it be great to extend this further and turn it essentially as a video with a montage of stories into a bigger, more ambitious visual outing? Hence, the film was born.
And how was the experience of making this movie? Did you have fun making it?
It was done very cheaply. Well, it wasn't. It was expensive, but not when you compare it to the expense of feature films. And it was done sort of very rogue and piratey, and we sort of broke into places, we borrowed places. And I remember we were undertaking the Midian album at the time, and I had to keep disappearing from the studio to go up and shoot scenes. But it was a great time, really, really fun. Guerrilla, that's how I describe it, as guerrilla filmmaking. Like the scenes with the girl in the city. We didn't close the city down. We just filmed. We just literally went into the streets and filmed.
Well, really,
there's lots of people, you know. Yeah. So there's lots of people that probably turned up on that movie they didn't even realize. Well, they obviously didn't realize. It was a lot of fun.
And about the video of From the Cradle to Enslave itself, that has an uncensored version and it's pretty extreme. How did that work? Like, you sent such a video to MTV. Do you send it censored from the beginning, or you just wait and see like what they would say?
Yeah,
like,
we made two versions of it. But ironically, when we were on the press tour for Midian, myself and Adrian Erlandson were sitting in the bar in Belgium, and we actually saw the uncensored version being played on TV.
Yeah, probably it was like really
even
late at night or something.
They decided, it was about sort of 9-10 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Bear in mind, it's Belgium and Europe. These people walk around naked anyway.
Well, anyways, we just really adore this song, and I think that was the first song I ever heard of Cradle, and then I went back to listen to the earlier stuff. I think it's a great time to listen to From the Cradle to Enslave, which is really a great black metal masterpiece right now.
Constellations, not the bounce,
From the Cradle to Enslave, we listened to this great song, and now we're talking with still with Danny Filth from Cradle Filth, which are coming to Israel to perform for the first time ever. If you weren't doing Cradle Filth, if it wasn't taking so much time from you, were you doing other things? Do you have other things that you would focus on, or other things that you do in life rather than music?
Well, yeah, I would I'd probably be writing a book, I guess, literature, some description. It'd either be that, I guess, or working at McDonald's. That's pretty all I could be able to do now. I've been doing this for so long. But yeah, no, I think literature, some kind of literature. I mean, I write occasionally for the magazines, and I just wrote an intro for the Moonspell biography. Mm-hmm. They've got a book coming out. Mm-hmm. And I've done a few voiceovers for various cartoons as well. So that would be another thing that I'd probably like to pursue.
Is there any kind of a hobby or anything that you do that is not related to your voice at all?
I play football, and I started to learn to fly light aircraft at one point, but it just got way too expensive because the airfield shut down, so I had to go to a further city. And it's one of those things you have to keep at quite religiously, which is very difficult when you're in a band.
Not everybody's Bruce Dickinson, you know, and can have like their own plane and taking the band to tour with.
It just makes things very difficult that you can't continue courses, because one minute it's fine, you know, you go, right, well, I'm going to go and study this, or I'm going to go and do this, take this up. And then you find that you're halfway through that course, and then suddenly you're off on tour for 6 months. So it kind of defeats the whole purpose of it.
Just to wrap this thing up, I have like a really quick question, and you can answer in like one, two words, whatever you feel comfortable with. First of all, what band got you into metal, if there is a specific one?
Ozzy Osbourne.
Is there a specific metal band that you just hate, that you can't listen to, that you can't understand why people listen to?
There's bands that I'm not particularly keen on, but I understand. Being a musician and been through all this, I totally understand where people are coming from. I respect people's opinions. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I've never been a massive fan of stuff like Machine Head for some reason. I've just never really got into Machine Head, mainly because I came from thrash metal and death metal and stuff, and I always thought Machine Head were, you know, I didn't get when they did the Burning Red. I can't understand how any band could come back from such an abysmal album, where they were trying to be like Limp Bizkit, and everybody, you know, and then they come back and be really cool and heavy again and swear a lot and everybody loves them, and nobody mentions the fact that he wanted to be Fred Durst. But that's just me.
Well, yeah,
I hate the band, I'm just not very keen on them.
Yeah, well, for us, actually, the Burning Red was, we liked this album, but there were like others that
called
were
him
really
Fred
hard.
Durst.
Well, you know, he did something. He had these dreads on his head, and he was doing some kind of a rap thing there. Yeah, I understand what he's saying.
But again, I don't hate it. I just don't understand it.
Yeah.
That's a difference, do you know what I mean?
For sure. Okay, so Metallica or Megadeth?
Yeah, well, I liked early Megadeth.
Early Megadeth.
You know, I lost track of Megadeth during the noughties. Metallica, yeah, big fan, but again, lost track. I think one of the few albums I ever took back was St. Anger. I think there's only been two albums I've actually gone back to the store, and one of them was Venom's Metal Black, which was just dreadful.
Yeah, fuck.
And the second one was St. Anger. It was just dreadful. I just, yeah, as soon as I heard it, I was like, this is giving me a headache.
No,
it is dreadful.
It was amazing. We had this kind of a weird like house party thing, and we brought this album, and you know, we bought it without even asking questions, because it's Metallica, you know. Even when they did a really mainstream thing like Load, it was great, you know. So we just bought it, and then we put it on the CD player, and we listened to it from beginning to the end, and we just didn't understand what happened. So I thought like, okay, maybe I'm wrong. Let's play it again. And then I just took the album and I threw it out of the window. It was just, it broke my heart. Yeah. Well,
I don't know what they were thinking. I liked the new album. I like the new album. They seem to have rediscovered. They're not very analytical. And
exactly.
Everything seems to drag on like too long. Like it's been like 3 minutes trying to get back to a point where the song forms again. They're not very good at self-editing. That's what I mean. That's why they have these massively long songs. I think that's down to Lars, because he sort of puts the songs together. And he's not the best. He's a good drummer, but he's not the best drummer in the world, to be fair. And so everything has to have like all these you know, these Death Magnetic was like that. It was Death Magnetic was really, really desperately trying to be And Justice for All. Even the way the songs are set out, you know, like, well, song four has got to be, you know, a little bit like one, and the fast one at the end.
Yeah,
it just was a bit, you know.
I'll just finish with asking another question. Are you collecting anything? Are you a collector of anything? Because we know that the other people that we've interviewed, they all had like these weird collections.
Everything in my house is a weird, and I collect toys, horror toys. I've got so many of them. I collect them, buy them, and put them in my loft. Mm-hmm. And I don't even open some of them. It's bizarre, I know. It's just a weird fetish thing I have. Antiques, weird, strange antiques. I've got two mummies. And, you know, Doctor Who? Do you know Doctor Who?
Doctor Who?
Yeah. Doctor Who? Yeah.
Do you know the... Yeah, the sci-fi series, Doctor Who. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I've got a Dalek, a life-size Dalek.
Oh, my God.
Doctor Who.
You got the whole Dalek in your home.
He speaks, yeah. Yeah. I've got to mend his voice, so he speaks and lights up. And so, yeah, just weird and wonderful thing. Taxidermy as well. Butterflies and insects and heads.
Wait, what do you mean? What insects? Like live insects or like stuffed insects or what?
Well, no, it's taxidermy. Stuffed, yeah. Preserved. Mm-hmm.
Danny, thank you very much for all of your time. It was great talking to you, and we're very excited to see you here perform in Israel.
Very excited.
So am I.
Yes.
Yeah. Any song of Cradle of Filth that you would like us to play, we'll do it happily.
But I'd like to play Achingly Beautiful, just because it's on the new album, and I think it's very old school.
Great
song. I
think
it just links perfectly to the fact that, you know, we're coming in support of the Cryptoriana album. It's Cryptoriana World Tour. The whole European leg culminates in Tel Aviv.
And would it be the same kind of a set list that you're doing every other place, or anything special for Israel just because you never came here before?
Well, hopefully, because it's the last show and that there's not a dreadful curfew, hopefully we'll play a bit of an extended set.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. You should, yes.
We play stuff from right across our, you know, our catalogue. It's not just the new album. We play new stuff. We play stuff from the old Hammer of the Witches, and then stuff from Cruelty, Godspeed, Pornography, Nymphetamine, Principle. You know, there's a lot of different stuff that we play.
Awesome. Danny, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. We'll see you here.
Absolute pleasure. Cheers.
Great.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Got
אוקיי, וואו, דני פילס היה רגע במטל מטל, ואנחנו מסיימים את התוכנית
הזאת. בעולם עדיין עומד.
בעולם עדיין עומד.
על טילו.
על טילו. אז שמענו כל מיני שירים לאורך התוכנית הזאת של קרדל אוף פילס, מכל מיני תקופות, מאלבום החדש, מאלבום השנוי במחלוקת סונוגרפי, מקולטי אנד הביסט, וכמובן את קרדל טו אנסלייב, הסינגל שפיצץ את ה-MTV בזמנו, ולא עסקנו בקור. של הבלק מטל, של ההתחלה, של The Principle of Evil Made Flesh. האלבום הראשון עם העטיפה הזאת של שתי הבחורות האלה, שיש שם איזה מישהו עם שדיים בחוץ, והיא נוגעת בה, וזה הולך שם מוות. בקיצור...
אתה יודע שם גם מוזיקה מעבר לתמונה הזאת.
ויש שם גם מוזיקה באלבום הזה. אז אנחנו נשמע את אחד הסינגלים האדירים והכבדים, והכי טרו קרדל בלק מטל מתחילת הדרך, The Forest Whispers My Name, ובניגוד לזה שאנחנו לרוב מסיימים עם השיר הכי שקט בתוכנית, אנחנו מסיימים עם השיר הכי כבד, ואנחנו...
ליאור. אני היער. ליאור.
אוקיי.
אני קורא אליו השם שלך, מה אתה רוצה?
אוקיי, ואנחנו נסיים את התוכנית הזאת של מטל מטל. תודה לדני פילס מקרדו פילס, תודה רבה ל-ASM שמביאים אותם לארץ, תודה רבה לכם שהזנתם, תודה רבה לפורסט שקורא בשמי, תודה רבה לניב פלג. כן.
Calling your name.
בקיצור, יואו, איזה גמור אתה.
It's me, Forest Camp.
בקיצור, ותודה שהייתם איתנו במטל מטל 106.2 FM, הרדיו הבינתחומי. תודה רבה לבינתחומי שאירחו אותנו כאן ונתנו לנו להקליט את התוכנית הנהדרת הזאת עם הרעיון הזה. ותודה רבה ל-TV1 Radio Studios בתל אביב, שבדרך כלל אנחנו מקליטים, אבל השבוע הקלטנו שם. ותודה רבה לרדיו הקצה, בו אנחנו משודרים, kzradio.net, מיד אחרינו קוואמי, אם אתם מאזינים לנו ברדיו הקצה, זה מומלץ, קוואמי, זה מומלץ. וגם כמובן, להזין לנו תמיד אפשר ב-www.metalmetal.co.il, אתר הבית הרשמי של מטל מטל, לא יש גם אפליקציה רשמית רק לאנדרואיד, מטל מטל, וגם יש את אתר הפודבין www.metalmetal.podbean.com, ויש לו אפליקציה שנקראת פודבין שעובדת בכל המכשירים, גם ב-iOS, גם באנדרואיד. That's why you had the white mark on your shoe, that's why you took that vampire bat, and that's why you יאללה ביי, אנחנו נסיים את התוכנית הזאת עם The Forest Whispers My Name.
Whispers.
מטל מטל, אתם הייתם איתנו ואנחנו נתנו לכם תוכנית באמת מעניינת. עם דני פילס, עם קריידל או פילס.
ואחרי פיק שכזה אנחנו חייבים, אתה יודע, עלייה לצורך הירידה, או איך שלא אומרים את זה. אנחנו חייבים לקחת איזו הפסקה קטנה בשביל למלא מצברים, להביא לכם עוד תוכניות איכותיות ועוד רעיונות חול ורעיונות מהארץ ולהקות בו
ורעיונות
כל מה שעשינו, ורעיונות לקונספטים חדשים, וסתם לנוח ולשמוע פתאום מוזיקה סתם שבא לך סתם לשמוע שיר, ואתה יכול לבוא ולהגיד איזה שיר שאתה רוצה לשמוע. אנחנו לא יכולים לעשות זה, למה? למה? ככה כל שבוע צריך לשמוע מה יש השבוע בתוכנית? יש ויש קרדיט, שומעים רק קרדיט, אין כוח, די, חלס, חלס.
אתם מוזמנים לכתוב לנו בקבוצת הפייסבוק שלנו על רעיונות שאתם רוצים שנעשה כאן בעונה הבאה של מטל מטל,
להקות שאתם רוצים שנראיין. מעבר לזה, רעיונות לקונספטים, פורמטים שכבר עשינו שאתם רוצים שנחזיר אותם לסיבוב נוסף, כתבו לנו בקבוצת הפייסבוק שלנו מטל מטל בפייסבוק. ואם אתם לא חברים, אז הגיע הזמן להצטרף, אחת הקבוצות הכי פעילות במטל ברשת, אולי בעצם הגדולה והוותיקה ביותר. וזהו, יאללה, בואו נראה אתכם בעוד כמה זמן, ויאללה ביי.
בינתיים, עד שאנחנו נתראה בפעם הבאה, www.metalmetal.co.il, יש שם את כל התוכניות, החל מתוכנית הראשונה משנת 2007 ועד היום, שנת 2018, 11 שנה של מטל, אתם מוזמנים להזין לדבר הזה.
ונסיים בכל תרועה!
טרו טרועה! טרו טרועה!
יום הולדת, יום הולדת,
חודש ינואר, יום הולדת, 11, למטל מטל, ואנחנו נתראה אתכם בהמשך שנת 2018. יאללה.